presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So I have kind of evolved a little bit my opinion on the Georgia wide receiver corps. Now, when you talk every day but the same subject, you do, I guess, run the risk of overthinking things over the course of time. And, you know, I have been of the belief that Georgia matching what it did last year with its wide receiver corps is actually not going to be that big of an ask, despite the fact that Georgia's got a whole bunch of need to replace a whole bunch of guys. Georgia's actually been in the business of regenerating its wide receiver production now for a number of years, with the exception of Terry Godwin, who was kind of a consistent presence for Georgia for most of the last 4 years. That same span of time saw different guys around him kind of rank among the leading receivers, so replacing receivers is actually something that Georgia's done quite a bit. However, I am also of the belief that receiving experience matters more than it does other position groups. Believe it or not, there is some statistical data that suggests that being experienced at wide receiver is more important than being experienced along the offensive line and being experienced at quarterback. That kind of flies in the face of what we intuitively believe to be true about college football, and yet there is some data to back that up. One day we're all together, I'll sit down and I'll tell you about some of that, and you can decide for yourself if you believe it. But the overall opinion is, I have been pretty sure that the Georgia receiving corps would be kind of what it was last year, but still a little unsure if the Georgia receiving corps was going to rise to the level of being national championship quality and national championship standard. Because the one thing that you see from virtually every national champion, especially during the playoff era, is they have a collection of great wide receivers. Now, for the most part, a national champion is going to be great across the board, but wide receiver productivity in particular has been something that national champions have had. So while I have been sure that Georgia matched what it will be able to match what it did a year ago, what Georgia did a year ago at the wide receiver position, and what has done thus far with 3 years worth of Kirby Smart as a head coach, has not quite been to the same level of what typical wide receivers have been for college football playoff national champions. So we're all on the same page about this up to this point, because I want to transition now and say, maybe there is starting to be a little bit of an evolution when it comes to the Georgia wide receiver position, that not only can it find a way to replace a Mecole Hardman and a Riley Ridley and, you know, the guys that are gone off last year's team, it might also be able to, as the phrase has gone for Georgia this entire offseason, it might be able to do more than it did a year ago and actually become a real weapon to go along with the running backs and the big offensive line and what we think that Jake Fromm might be able to do as a junior third-year starting quarterback. An example of someone who apparently feels that way is Aaron Murray. And yes, I realize that Murray is a former UGA quarterback, and so therefore him saying good things about George is not necessarily going to be that big of a surprise. And the context for the clip that I'm about to play is him picking George to win the East, and obviously that's not going out on much of a limb, because everybody, not even Dog Nation, but pretty much everybody anywhere, it's almost a unanimous thought that Georgia's going to win the SEC East this year. But it's the reason why that Murray thinks they're going to win the East, and of all the things that he could have cited, that I will admit I at least find a little bit interesting. So here from a CBS Sports TV show, let me let you hear the former Georgia quarterback, Aaron Murray. Take a listen.
I like my dogs in this one. I really do. I
think there it is.
Close. Had a chance these past couple of times.
To talk yourself into.
I'm going with the dogs on this one. They went. They finally pushed through this year. Those receivers, by the end of the season, they're going to be rolling.
Why is it that every television studio football show has to have four guys talking at the same time? Is this what Before the Hedges sounds like? Do I talk over Jeff this much on the show every single Wednesday? You can't even play 10 seconds of Aaron Murray without hearing four other people talking. I feel like CBS does that on its shows more so than the other ones do, but in the midst of everybody else sort of shouting and guffawing there, you did hear Aaron Murray, the former Georgia quarterback, pick the dogs to win the East, no surprise, but it's that phrasing there at the end that Murray believes that the Georgia wide receivers will be rolling by the time the season comes to an end. And While I have thought for a while that George would probably be fine, okay, able to replace a Holloman, able to replace a Ridley, able to replace a Hardman, at least be as good as it was last year. I wouldn't exactly describe what Georgia did in 2018 as quote-unquote rolling, but Murray, the former quarterback here, says he thinks that is indeed what they will be doing by the time this season comes to an end. I think that's an important way to phrase this, too, because it kind of speaks to the evolution that's going to occur. Do I expect Georgia to throw for 400 yards against Vanderbilt week one, Notre Dame week four? That may be a little early in the season for big-time passing numbers to show up. But by the time you play an experienced Florida secondary in November, could that happen? By the time you play your important games, the ones that truly matter, December and beyond, could the Georgia wide receiving core be part of the solution as opposed to part of the problem? I think there's a very good chance that's the case. It's an evolution of my opinion on that as we've discussed that this offseason. And one of the reasons I've grown to be more confident about the Georgia wide receiver core is I'm starting to be of the belief that those whispers that we heard during spring practice, and they were just whispers because we didn't get to see him on G-Day, but there were some whispers that Demetrius Robertson was going to be a far different player in year two with the Bulldogs than he was in year one. And sometimes when this stuff happens behind closed doors, it's like what I said about Felipe Franks' supposed development yesterday. When we don't get to see it with our own eyes, we would have every right to be skeptical of it. And not seeing Robertson with our eyes much during spring practice, not seeing him at all on G-Day because he was ill and not able to play, I'll admit I was left a little skeptical about what Robertson might truly bring to the table this season. But the whispers that you've heard about a couple scrimmages, about what the media members, myself included when I'm in Athens, have seen with our own eyes. Demetrius Robertson apparently is a big part of the Georgia wide receiver story right now. This is a guy that was a former freshman All-American at Cal and a former five-star prospect coming out of high school. If he is as advertised, that to me changed the tone and the tenor for the Georgia wide receiver core by magnitudes. And by the way, the national media is also potentially noticing Robertson as well, because Sports Illustrated did this thing the other day, and we do this at Dog Nation from time to time. We typically call it Cover 4. Sports Illustrated did their version of this where let's get all of our writers in a room. Let's let them all weigh in on the same topics, different opinions, same topic, and we'll just kind of put that out there and let the world consume it. Sports Illustrated did that the other day with playoff picks and breakout players and things like that. And Ross Dellinger, good writer for Sports Illustrated, when he was asked to name his breakout player, not in the SEC, but for the entire country, the name that he mentioned was Georgia wide receiver Demetrius Robertson. Now, I think Ross is a good writer, so let me read you a couple of sentences of why Ross likes Demetrius Robertson, and this will lead us to explain why maybe the evaluations of the Georgia wide receiving core are getting upgraded as we head towards the start of the season. Dellinger writes, "Who is Demetrius Robertson?" He says that's the point. The Georgia receiver signed out of high school with Cal, landed on some freshman All-American teams in 2016, and then, well, he kind of disappeared. He means after getting hurt at Cal in 2017 and not playing much at Georgia in 2018. He goes on to say, yeah, he suffered an injury as a sophomore, redshirted, returned to his home state last year, transferring to UGA. He didn't catch a single pass in 2018, dropping a few balls. In fact, a year later, 2019 offers many opportunities. Guys who he played behind last year, McCole Hardman, Riley Ridley, Terry Godwin, they're now in the NFL, Dellinger says, and Jeremiah Holloman was dismissed from the team in June. It's now or never for the guy they call D-Rob. Once again, that's Ross Dellinger for Sports Illustrated. But the whole now or never phenomenon, the betting favorite in that particular choice would seem to be now a whole lot more than it's going to be never. One of the things I'm most confident about when it comes to preseason projections for Georgia is that Robertson will, I think, clearly be one of Georgia's top three receivers, just based on everything that I'm hearing. That's the prediction that I'm willing to make. And if that's true, finding two capable guys to go with him from the rest of that crop, I think it just becomes far, far easier to do. It's also worth pointing out that ESPN recently said some interesting things as well about another Georgia receiver, Tyler Simmons. You can read Connor Riley at DogNation.com and get a little bit more on that. I mean, listen, I'm not going to sugarcoat this. The wide receiver core is still for Georgia a bit of a work in progress. We all know that. However, there is apparently some progress being made. National media noticing that potentially with Robertson, whispers and rumors kind of coming out of some of these closed door scrimmages. Kirby Smart himself has even kind of suggested that this group might be coming along. Still a ways to go, but in terms of being one of the weaknesses on the Georgia roster this season, that may not end up being the case. Here is Kirby from this past Saturday.
I mean, there's been progress, yeah. I mean, I think you can always do more, and that's what we're trying to do. So, I mean, I'm very pleased with that group's effort, toughness, resiliency, pushing through, contact toughness. There's some balls that probably should have been caught that weren't today, but that's probably always going to be the case.
So Kirby says the group can always do more, and he means on the practice field right now to be ready for the start of the upcoming season. However, there is also a possibility that this group finds a way to do more in the season of 2019 than the wide receiving core did even in 2018, despite the fact that group has now a lot of representatives in the NFL. This will be one of those storylines that gets watched a lot this year. If Georgia doesn't win the national championship, the receiving core could end up being one of the main reasons why. But if it does, the receiving core, its development, its growth, its maturity over the course of the season could also be one of the catalysts that causes that to happen as well. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us. Live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, or on the radio at noon as well on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. And we are available as a podcast wherever you find them, Apple Podcast Player, the Google Podcast Player, and the world-famous DogNation.com. Just many of the ways that you can hear Dog Nation Daily each day, and we're really glad to have you with us. And I cannot wait to see you myself coming up this Thursday, August 22nd is the day, but it's just tomorrow. Tomorrow is the day for this, for our Kroger kickoff to start the 2019 season. This is our big season preview event. We've done this now several years in a row, and it's been one of the biggest events that we've done each and every year. The one we did at Kroger last year, the same place we're going to return to this year, was one of the biggest events we've had. Tomorrow night expects to be just the same, so please mark this down in your calendar. Tomorrow, Kroger Marketplace right there in Cumming. It's 5550 Bethelview Road. That's the address. 5550 Bethelview Road for the Kroger Marketplace. This is a gigantic facility, and right there in the middle of the facility, believe it or not, there's a bar. They call it the Crow Bar, kind of a clever play on words, bar inside a Kroger called a Crow Bar. That's our host. That's our home. So get yourself a cocktail, some beer, some wine. Do a little shopping while you're there. But gather around. Talk some football with us starting at 6 p.m. The entire Dog Nation team's going to be there. I can't wait to see myself. In fact, I can't wait to give each of you for coming out a really cool Dog Nation t-shirt. Now, if you're watching a video, you can obviously see this. Great t-shirt, Dog Nation logo. This is soft. It's comfortable. It's one of the nicest ones we've done. And we're going to give these out tomorrow as a special thank you for being a part of what we do here each and every day at Dog Nation and on Dog Nation Daily, but especially for supporting our friends at Kroger Marketplace there in Cumming. So come on out and buy and see us tomorrow night starting at 6 p.m., 5550 Bethelview Road. Can't wait to have you there. All right, we're going to get Mike Griffith in a moment, our Dog Nation guy at practice, along with Connor Riley and many others from Dog Nation there on a daily basis. He'll give us his thoughts about what he's seen as of late and kind of what's next for Georgia as it heads towards Vanderbilt on two Saturdays from now. Before that, though, let's get ready to go around the Dogcast. It's presented today by my friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia, and got a chance to hear from Georgia offensive lineman Cade Mays yesterday. Man, a few words, at least in some respects. Some of these clips I'm about to play for you are a little short, but Mays is a guy who's a lot more comfortable doing his talking on the field. And one of the things that's amazing to me about Mays is the fact, as it stands right now, it's not a given that he'll be a starter for Georgia. In fact, if I had to give my point spread edge here, I'd probably favor Ben Cleveland to be the starter at right guard to begin this season. Mays obviously will be a starter for most any team in college football, but the overwhelming depth that Georgia has might push Mays, at least for now, into a reserve role. And that total number of top flight players in this offensive line room for Georgia right now is something that Mays addressed yesterday.
You know, we're real deep on O-line, and we're just competing every day, making the most of our reps, and just doing everything that we can.
You know, offensive line's an attrition position. The way that you lean on someone else and enforce your will causes them to get tired and get hurt potentially. And over the course of a season, you may have a little bit of a stress test that causes one of your guys to get hurt or injured as well. Football's a violent collision sport. Mays, as a potential backup for Georgia, if that's indeed the role that he's going to be in this year, is the kind of thing that could prove to be very valuable for Georgia by the end of the year. Mays, after all, as a backup last year, ended up being on the field a whole bunch before the season was done. This is a valuable member of the Georgia team, whether he's one of the first five offensive linemen or not. He also talked a little bit yesterday about, for the folks who talk about him, how he wants to be known, what he wants his so-called brand to be. I loved this from Cade Mays as well.
I would say the best thing somebody can say about me is just that I play hard and that I love the game. And
and that I just want to finish people.
You're talking about two words that pack a real punch, and you could spend 1,000 words talking about what he means by two simple words at the end of that statement there. He wants to finish people. He wants to be a mauler. He wants to drive somebody into the ground. It's one of the reasons why Mays is already quite popular with many Georgia fans and popular with his teammates and coaches as well because of the versatility that he's shown. He's not just a backup at one position for Georgia potentially. He's almost a backup at them all, and that kind of, what's the phrase that gets you, Swiss Army knife type personality is something Mays is pretty proud of that he's grown and developed into. Here is more from Cade.
I like being that useful, you know. I like if anything happens, I'm the guy that can be plugged in. I'm the guy that, you know, anything that happens, I'm the guy. So you know, it's definitely helped me learn in the center spot. It's helped me, you know, learn the offense better, knowing what everybody's doing. So I don't think it slowed me down. I think it's definitely picked my game up and elevated it to a new level.
With due respect to Jamari Salyer, there's a chance that Mays is the lead backup at all five offensive line positions, both tackles, both guards, and maybe even at center as well, which is not what you thought about Mays coming out of high school, but it just goes to show you his growth, and to have he and Salyer as a part of that backup situation for Georgia, potentially anyway. Mays may still win the starting job at right guard. That is a nice thing for the Dogs to be able to have. It's Around the Doghouse. It's presented by my friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And you know, ESOG is a solutions-based company. I love Jay, Derek, the whole team over there at Engineered Solutions of Georgia, because they're not going to just like run up some big bill on you because they think they can. If you've got an issue with a wet basement or a damp crawl space or a kind of a crack in your foundation, oftentimes this can be just a really simple fix. And if that's the case, then Engineered Solutions of Georgia will tell you how to fix it simply. Go to the hardware store, for instance, and just take care of it. But oftentimes, these kinds of structural issues can be a much bigger deal. Anything affecting the foundation of your home, for instance. And if that be the case, you want to trust ESOG as well, because they have two full-time engineers on staff. They are experts at doing the job they do. You want to trust them to do just that. So my advice to you, if it's a wet basement, damp crawl space, crack in your foundation, anything like that, simply dial this number. Dial 678-ESOG now. 678-ESOG now. That will get you in touch with Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Good to have them as part of Around the Doghouse. Good to have you with us as well. Hope you enjoy our buddy Mike Griffith right now as a part of Dog Nation Daily.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
It has been a spirited last few days for Georgia, seemingly, when it comes to its practices. Better reports coming off the scrimmage this past Saturday than the scrimmage for week one. Truly, it seems like the mood is picking up. The energy is increasing as we're now less than 2 weeks away from Georgia's season opener at Vanderbilt to start the 2019 season. For more on that, we say hello to Mike Griffith, who covers the Dogs for DogNation.com. Mike, thanks so much for being here with us, for observing everything going on Athens on a daily basis, and I hope you're doing well today.
Thanks, B.A.
So before we kind of get into what you've seen and what's been going on as of late, let me start with a couple things that we were just addressing here a moment ago. First of all, in the wide receiver core, you know, I have kind of evolved my opinion on this group as we head towards the start of the season in terms of being national championship quality. I haven't been sure of that. I'm still not completely sure in that regard if Georgia can do what the Alabamas, the Clemsons, the Oklahomas of the world have done when it comes to a crop of wide receivers. But I feel better about this group than I did a few weeks ago, certainly a couple of months ago. And I think part of the reason I feel that way, and I addressed this with the audience before you joined us, is the fact that it seems like, as of now, Demetrius Robertson, his growth and development is as advertised. There were whispers about this during the spring. There are even louder whispers about that thus far this summer. He seems to be solidly in the mix to be one of Georgia's top receivers, most likely there in that slot position. And if this former freshman All-American, this former five-star recruit, if he's a guy that you truly can depend on in 2019 after not playing a whole lot in 2018, then I believe the entire calculus for this wide receiver core is then changed. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would say that the algebraic equation looks a lot better for Georgia if they've got some positive numbers coming out of the receiving core. And to your point, Demetrius Robertson, a guy that didn't do much last year, but only because there were some really good guys in front of him, and he really wasn't physically capable of doing the kind of things that Kirby demands out of that position in terms of the downfield blocking, special teams, and you're right. All indications have been that he's done really well. And he know, Kirby hasn't talked a lot about him in the fall of the A, and I almost wonder if that's on purpose. You know, sometimes you don't want to talk about the guys that are doing the best. You kind of want to keep it quiet. I wouldn't be surprised if Brian Herring and Demetrius Robertson were the leading rusher and leading receiver in the first game against Vanderbilt.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to think about. And I guess my point here on Robertson, to kind of follow up on that a little bit, is as spectacular as the moment from the viral George Pickens video was, and as justifiable as the excitement that many fans have about Pickens might be, I wrote about this for DogNation.com the other day. You know, freshman receivers in this league haven't done quite as well as you might think. There are some examples where guys over the course of the last, you know, half dozen years or so have done really well, but you know, on average, average performances is about all you can expect from freshman receivers. And at Georgia, just simply because of the way that Georgia has recruited the position prior to 2019, the results were probably even a little bit more meager than that. So I think that Pickens can certainly have some moments for Georgia, and there's a chance that he matches a lot more to what guys like Calvin Ridley have done as a freshman and, you know, things along those lines. But a guy like Robertson, because he's played before, because he's been on the Georgia roster for a full year now, even if he wasn't playing a ton in key moments in 2018, he is a safer bet than Pickens, despite the fact that Pickens may be the most spectacular looking of any of the Georgia receivers. Robertson is just a safer bet because of his previous experience.
I agree with that, and plus he plays in the slot, which, you know, a lot more of a controlled passing game, quick passing game, higher percentage passes. So you got to think that, you know, Georgia's going to throw more high percentage passes when they do throw the ball. You know, Kirby's big into ball control and not taking too many chances. They will go downfield and stretch, but I agree with you. Yeah, I think that Demetrius is a better bet. I think Tyler Simmons is probably a better bet. You know, but what it really comes down to is that they don't have to be a championship squad in September. I don't believe they need to be peaking to beat Notre Dame. I think they could beat Notre Dame by 3 touchdowns with both teams just, you know, playing the B game. I think Tennessee could be a challenge only because Jeremy Pruitt has the advantage of knowing the personnel with, you know, Kevin Shiela on that staff, very familiar, and now Jim Chaney. They do know Georgia's personnel very well. That is a road game. I think Tennessee is very weak at the line of scrimmage, though, so I think Georgia will be able to run the ball effectively. But as far as winning the pass game actually has to be up to snuff to win a football game, I think you're looking at Jacksonville, November 2nd. And I think that between now and November 2nd, Jake Fromm and his receivers will be in sync.
Well, I think it's an interesting point that you're making, Mike, and I actually believe the Tennessee game is an important step to be ready for that Florida game, because I agree with you that the biggest test that Georgia will face with its receivers does begin in November. Florida has a legitimately good secondary. Auburn will have a good defense. You'll be on the road with them in November. Then December, the games that really matter. Passing game is just a very big part of winning games against a team like Alabama, who you might play in the SEC championship, and who, you know, the kinds of teams that Georgia would face if it were to go to the college football playoff. You need the passing game to be effective. But the other point that you bring up, which I think is a good one, is the Tennessee game for me is the dress rehearsal for all that, because I don't think that Tennessee is good enough to beat Georgia, but I've said this before on my show a couple of times. Tennessee on paper probably has one of the three best secondaries that Georgia will face during the regular season. I do think that secondary on the road is a pretty good dress rehearsal for these guys. The Georgia receivers don't need to be great to win that game that day, but to feel good about the rest of the season, it'd be nice for somebody to show something in that game, because between Avante Taylor and Bryce Thompson and Warrior the safety, and that group is a legitimate secondary group. It matches kind of the top end of most of the SEC. So if Georgia can grow up a little bit in its first true road test in Knoxville — I don't believe that Nashville is a legitimate road test, in other words — if Georgia's receivers can grow up a little bit on that day, then I think the fans going to feel a lot better about the games later on in the season, when the passing game is going to matter a lot more.
Yeah, I would agree. And I do think, though, for the record, I do think Vanderbilt's going to challenge him early. You know, Derek Mason's going to load up against the run, and he's going to make Jake throw it. And I think they'll torch Vandy, and I think that game will be a bit of a runaway. But I think early on it could get a little hairy, because, you know, Vanderbilt's going to sell out. And I think a lot of Derek Mason is a coach. I know they weren't much of a test last year. But on the road, under the lights, first game, I just get the feeling that Kirby's going to come out there with a very conservative, smash-mouth mentality, be very patient, very deliberate against Vanderbilt. The game won't be as close as the score at halftime. and by the end of the third quarter, maybe the Commodores are sucking wind. Where, you know, to your point, Tennessee is kind of a wild card team. You know, I've seen some people pick them as, you know, the upset team or the team to watch. If Georgia didn't have a bye week, you know, I might buy a little bit more into that. I'm much more concerned about November, BA. I mean, I look at the schedule now, and, you know, that November stretch of Florida, Missouri, Auburn, Texas A&M, that's three teams ranked in the top 16, and Missouri. And Missouri, of those four teams, those three teams, was actually a tougher game than Florida or Auburn last year. So I look at November, and I feel kind of like you, that, you know, Jake's going to have some time to get the passing game going. And to your point, you know, Tennessee sitting there on October 5th after a bye week with a very good back seven, the only saving grace is that they're very weak at the line of scrimmage. And we know that Kirby's going to go in there and, what did you say, chop wood? They're going to chop wood in Knoxville.
So let me talk about a couple of injury situations for a moment. If you're a Georgia fan, I think it's slightly concerning that Julian Rochester is still battling with what kept him out of spring practice. David Marshall still a little hobbled as well from his Liz Frank situation. You know, I'm not a doctor. I won't even begin to project what those guys are going to be able to contribute this season, what they'll be able to contribute early. But I think the Georgia fan was hopeful that those two names would be, you know, kind of healthy and full go here. And as of right now, that's not necessarily the case. What do you make of the Rochester-Marshall lingering injury issues?
Yeah, well, Julian Rochester had ACL surgery, which was never really announced. And, you know, Kirby kind of let it slip last week. And I'm like, oh, okay. So, you know, we didn't think maybe arthroscopic, not an ACL. So the fact that him and Marshall are being brought along slowly, they're doing what they can do. They're practicing with the team half the time, Kirby says, and with the trainers the other half. You know, and again, we look back at the schedule, BA, and it's like, you know, are you really going to push these guys to be ready for August 31st at Vanderbilt? Because let's be honest, Murray State and Arkansas State are just, I mean, they're walkover games. I mean, Kirby gets to name the score, decide who he wants to play. They're effectively, you know, like playing junior high teams. They're scrimmages. So you really don't need Rochester and Marshall, I don't think. And you really maybe want to target September 21st and maybe even October 5th. You know, I look at Georgia's defensive line, and while I do think it's the biggest position group of concern in terms of winning it all, in terms of winning a national championship, it's still pretty deep. There are six seniors. You take two out of the mix, you still got four, plus Jordan Davis. You know, plus Tresman is impressed. So I still think there's enough depth there. Malik Herring, even if Marshall and Rochester aren't ready for the opener, I think that's okay. I think you go ahead and give them an extra 3 weeks instead of rushing them for Vandy. If you're Georgia and you want to make sure that they're absolutely positively healthy, because as we've mentioned a couple times on this call, it's almost like we're waiting for November. In fact, maybe I should write a headline and do a story that says waiting for November. Because the first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games of the season, I don't think anybody's going to play Georgia within 20 points.
Somehow waiting for November sounds like the title of a Nicholas Sparks novel or something like that. You know, I picture kind of a seaside North Carolina end. Somehow that's what waiting for November kind of reminds me of. Maybe you could become a novelist on the side. One more thing on the injury front here. What do you make of the N'Kobe Dean situation? You talked about the ankle in your practice report yesterday for DogNation.com. I guess Kirby's kind of spoken about that a little bit, going back to an interview that he did, Athens Radio, here this week. It's obviously a headline-grabbing name. Dean's a huge fan favorite now because of his five-star status coming in high school. Any reason you think to be concerned about the Dean status at the moment?
No, and if anything, BA, I see the glass half full, because it's given Quay Walker an opportunity to get some reps with Channing Tindall. And, you know, we're all kind of, you know, looking to see what's going to happen with Quay Walker. He was a guy that came in with a lot of flair with the, you know, the very unique hat dance that involved spiraling a Tennessee hat into the audience. That's a moment that I think will live on forever. For the better here in Athens, I know in Knoxville it was not exactly well received. But what a moment for Quay. Now he needs to get on the field. We know he's capable. We know last year he was just learning the position. There's a lot to play inside linebacker. So with N'Kobe out, it's given Quay an opportunity to get some valuable repetitions along with Channing Tindall. And they're working there behind Tay Crowder and Monty Rice. So You got to look at it like that. That's the good news with Georgia, is that on this roster, everybody can play football. You know, there's no space fillers on the Georgia roster. I said it yesterday. It takes something special to be a part of this football team. It's not for everyone. You can look in the transfer portal and see who washed out and who wasn't able to maintain the standard that you need to have at Georgia, being that team-first patient guy and playing your role. That's not for everyone. So when you do get an opportunity like Quay's gotten to step up a little bit and get some extra reps, I think that's a healthy thing. So while I know we're anxious to see Nakobe get back, and we will, you know, high ankle sprain, you just got to take your time. You got to look at the glass being half full and someone else getting an opportunity to get some really valuable reps.
Let me squeeze in one quick final question before we let you go. I took it as good news on Saturday that the guys apparently that didn't play as well, first scrimmage, offensive line, Jake Fromm maybe, Georgia starters in particular, just generally speaking, apparently they brought more of an energy, brought more of an edge on Saturday. As you get close to the start of the season, as John Stinchcomb said when he joined us on Monday, you need leaders to lead, and it sounds like Georgia had its leaders leading on Saturday, which I took as a good thing.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, the best leader leading, though, was Friday. And we made it, you know, we know it was a viral video, and we've all gotten a big laugh out of watching how Kirby pulled the prank on his team with Matthew Bowling anchoring that run. But a moment like that, where everybody can just take a deep breath and laugh together and have some fun together, there's some real value to that, BA. You know, it's kind of like when the Dog Nation team got together at your celebration last week. There's some value to people getting together and having a laugh and sharing goodwill. You know, so much of what we do in our lives is all about work and the grind, and certainly that's the case over there at Georgia with Kirby and his players and what they're aiming for. But, you know, kudos to Kirby to know when to, you know, kind of take his foot off the gas a little bit and have a little bit of fun with the team. And I absolutely believe that had everything to do with what happened on Saturday. You know, and that's just being a good football coach, having the pulse of your team and being a good leader. And I think that's the magic of Kirby Smart. I think that's why his teams win. I think that's why he recruits effectively, because I think he's one of the best leaders in college football.
Yeah, it's amazing. Mike, it was a fun video, and I think Dog fans have had a really good time with this over the last couple of days. We appreciate you being with us here today on Dog Nation Daily. We'll look forward to reading a bunch more practice coverage from you and insight before the season opener at Vanderbilt next Saturday at DogNation.com. And obviously, we'll enjoy a chance to chat with you here on Dog Nation Daily again very soon as well.
Look forward to it, BA. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Fruit.
Yeah, you know, my favorite thing about that Matthew Bowling video, and I don't know if I said this in the show yesterday or not, but if you watch the video, I mean, like, click into the Georgia video, turn on the sound and things like that, the whole thing has got kind of a 80s sports movie vibe to it to me somehow. They do a pretty good job of, like, building up the drama for it. I kind of came of age when I think of as sort of the sports movie era, with apologies to Apollo Creed and whatnot, or Adonis Creed. I don't really think we're in much of a sports movie era right now. I feel like you got to go back to 80s, early 90s for the best sports movies. And the way that Georgia shoots this video, whether it was intentionally or just accidentally, it kind of comes across as like a really cool sports movie, the type of thing you would have gone to see in the theater when you were a kid, at least if you're my age. It's also amazing to think that Bowling is so fast that he can talk to, is that LeCount he's running next to right there, can talk to him while he's running. Just an amazing, amazing sprinter, and a really cool video courtesy of UGA. So that's been fun. Before you are SEC through, let me remind you about something I'm excited about on Saturday. I hope you'll come out and see me at Universities Forever. This goes on August 24th. That's this Saturday from 10 to 5 p.m. It's Customer Appreciation Day. I'll be there personally from 11 to 1, but it's 10 to 5 p.m. the entirety of the day. Let me give you an idea of some of the things that are going on. The UGA Redcoat Alumni Band is going to be there playing some of the fan favorite songs. Also, they'll have Redcoat Band memorabilia and gear on sale as well. Whole bunch of tailgating supplies, really cool prints by the photographer Scott O'Neill. If you want to decorate your office or your home studio, if you've got one like we have here at Dog Nation World Headquarters, food trucks on site. I'll be there. We'll do a live show from there during the window from 11 to 1. It's going to be a great time. So come by and see us. Universities Forever, a really cool store incoming. The address, 2080 Ronald Reagan Boulevard incoming. 2080 Ronald Reagan Boulevard incoming. You can also go to universitiesforever.com and find out a whole lot more about that. All right, a lot of SEC stories to get to. over the course of the next couple of minutes as a part of our SEC through. Auburn has named a starting quarterback. They're going to go with the freshman Bo Nix. They even made him available to reporters, which is a little atypical for freshman quarterbacks in the SEC, even ones that have just been named starters. Auburn is clearly trying to rally around Nix and put him out there as the face of this program. However, I believe that there's actually a negative undertone to the story. I'm going to give you my opinion on this, and you can decide for yourself. Is this just wishful thinking for a Georgia fan, which I admittedly am, with the Deep South's oldest rivalry in mind, or is there a chance this is true? You want good competitions. You want a quarterback to emerge after battling it out and winning against another quarterback who also performed well. But Auburn, in the way it names Bo Nix the starter, has less of a feeling to me of a close competition that Nix edges Gatewood out, Joey Gatewood, the other quarterback in this discussion. If that were the case, I feel like this competition would likely extend into the season. The fact that it's not lets me know that it's not that Auburn believes it can beat Oregon with Bo Nix. To me, this starts to feel like Auburn doesn't think it could beat Oregon, its week one opponent, with Joey Gatewood. In other words, the rumors coming out of Auburn have been that Gatewood was having trouble moving the football during Auburn practices and Auburn scrimmages. This comes across to me as Bo Nix winning this quarterback battle by default. Now, that's not necessarily an indictment of Nix, the fact that the other guy in the competition proved not to be very good, but this is not the way that most teams want to name its starting quarterback. I've told you before that by the time that November rolls around and Georgia played Auburn, I was pretty sure that Nix would be the guy for the Tigers. Despite the fact that Gatewood had been hyped a little bit by some Auburn fans, I assumed that Nix was going to be that guy. But the fact that well ahead of the season opener, Auburn has named Nix the starter leads me to believe that the team just didn't believe much in Gatewood, that Gatewood wasn't putting up much of an argument for himself during Auburn practices. This could be a little bit of a problem. Freshman quarterback, neutral site venue to start the season against Oregon. Maybe this quarterback competition at Auburn wasn't quite as deep as Gus Malzahn would have led you to believe, and that's a little bit of an issue. All right, a couple other stories. Let me roll through these quickly. Off the top of the program, you heard me play the audio of Aaron Murray in discussing his reasoning for thinking that Georgia's going to win the East. He referenced the wide receivers. We talked about that. One of the other personalities on the set, Brian Jones, also picked LSU to win the SEC West, but he was the only one to make that pick, and essentially he was laughed at for doing it. Now, on this show, I have picked LSU to win the SEC West as well, and I've probably been laughed at by many of you for making that pick as well. Let me at least, despite the fact that LSU admittedly has not played that well against Alabama in the games that have mattered for it, let me at least make a case for Orgeron being a better coach than you might think. These numbers come courtesy of the website MajorWager.com, who lets us know that going back to the middle of the 2016 season when Orgeron took over as interim coach for LSU, that he's posted a 16-5 record against the spread in SEC games. 16-5 against the spread against SEC opponents. And you may say a lot of that five may have come against LSU, and for all I know, maybe it did. But when you're continually exceeding expectations in conference play in the SEC, you're actually a better coach than some people realize. You know, go back a year or so ago, I made as much fun of Ed Orgeron as anybody would in terms of not just his voice and his dialect, but his actual coaching performances on the field. I'm not mocking him quite as much anymore. He's actually doing better compared to expectations at LSU than you might think. He's 4-0 on the road against the spread as an underdog, 3-1 against the spread on a neutral field. This is a guy coaching his team up more than you might think. Couple other SEC stories to squeeze in very quickly while we have a little bit of time here. I also referenced some of those Sports Illustrated sort of aggregation picks from their writers about various things. Demetrius Robertson is a breakout star. You may remember me mentioning that off the top of the program. They also had a crew of folks making playoff picks. Nobody picked Georgia win the national championship, but a few did pick Georgia to make the college football playoff. One of their writers, I forget which one, frankly, it wasn't a guy that I'd heard of before, which is kind of the current state of Sports Illustrated, I guess. But nonetheless, he picked Georgia to play Alabama in the playoff. Now, I'm talking about the national semifinal. Now, think about this in your mind. What would have to happen for Georgia and Alabama not to meet in a national championship game, which did happen in 2017, but is two SEC teams playing in a national semifinal? You got to do a little mental gymnastics to get to there to that point. But for the most part, Sports Illustrated kind of matches what the nation has thought of Georgia up until recently. Playoff team, maybe one of the top four teams in the country, but not ready to break through that threshold with Alabama, its nemesis in the SEC, Clemson, who's had a stranglehold on national championships in two of the last 3 years. So Sports Illustrated kind of going more with the pack than some of our recent examples, like the Bear Chris Felica from ESPN and others who've actually gone on the record to say that Georgia wins the national championship. Our buddy Barrett Salee did that on our airwaves here on Dog Nation Daily not all that long ago. As we get close to the season opener, week zero for Florida and Miami, boy, you've heard a lot of doubting of Florida here this week. Dusty Dvorak, an analyst on ESPN, was on College Football Live yesterday, kind of going over all the things. Trouble with the offensive line, leading to an inability to run the football. All of a sudden, Florida against LSU and Auburn, some of these teams has to play. Georgia, for sure, not going to quite match up. We obviously believe that here, and we've said that a million times over the course of the last few months. It is kind of interesting, though, to see within the last few days, AP poll comes out. We're only a couple of days away from Florida playing as a little more than a touchdown favorite in Orlando against Miami. How much national opinion on the Gators has kind of evolved and kind of joined where we've been now for a number of months, because we obviously talk about this stuff each and every day. Will Florida be fine against Miami? There's a chance they will be. That's a first-year coach, first game starting quarterback for the Hurricanes. But will the Florida problems eventually be exposed? I think almost for sure. And let me squeeze in one more thing before we get ready to get out of here today. I saw where Mike Locksley, the current Maryland coach, had something very interesting to say in a story for USA Today about former Alabama quarterback Jalen Hurts. Locksley tells USA Today that he believes that part of the reason why Hurts picked Oklahoma was because Hurts wants a rematch with Alabama. These two teams actually played in the playoff last year, and the insinuation from Locksley would seem to be that Hurts wants some revenge against the Crimson Tide for choosing Tua over him as its starting quarterback. This is interesting for two fronts. Obviously, Hurts has kind of played the good soldier role for Alabama. Privately, it's no surprise that he might have some different feelings about Alabama and Nick Saban than he's let on with publicly. But the fact that Locksley is so outspoken about this, after also being outspoken the other day involving Josh Gattis, another former Tide assistant, leads you to believe that Locksley's not going to be apparently the typical former Saban assistant who pays deference to Saban. He is now wanting to be his own man. So kind of interesting to hear Locksley speaking up on this. So I was going to play some Kirby Smart audio. We obviously ran out of time on that today. We'll have to do that tomorrow. We'll kind of get back to more of Kirby's evaluations as we get close to the start of the season. Let me also tell you about my friends at Kroger here just for a moment. We're coming up on Labor Day, the big weekend to start the season for Georgia, but also a fun time for cookouts and everything else wherever you might be. I hope you'll use Kroger to get ready for whatever Labor Day party you might be having. You can save on everything you need. How about this? Half boneless New York strip loin, just $5.99 a pound when you use the card. You can also save on Coke products, hot dogs, and don't forget those desserts there as well. Those drumstick popsicles. My kids love those things. You can get big savings on those as well at your local Kroger. Hope you check that out. Labor Day can be Flavor Day when you use Kroger. How about Gator Hater Updater time? Will they beat Miami on Saturday? They might, but they're not beating the Dogs. It's been 1,026 days since that's happened. It's our Gator Hater Updater. We'll see you tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily.